Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss Skeleton Crew, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by my fellow kids who have found themselves on a random starship. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. Hey. So good to talk to everyone again. Tony, don't interrupt me. All I want to do is talk about Stormlight 5.
No, that's not what we're here for.
Okay, KB.
I was about to say, tag yourself. Which kid are you?
Literally, the initials are.
I know,
that's
right?
True. It's your initials.
Yeah, it is my initials.
Tony Sindelar is also here, by the way. Hi, Tony.
Is that how you pronounce your name, Sindelar?
No, I my head sling in my throat.
Wait, how do you pronounce your last name?
Sindelar. I just said it weird.
I'm
copping to it. I was hoping nobody would pick it out and mention it, but yet.
You know, sometimes, Kat, you do these things and it really makes it hard to maintain the charade that we are all friends here.
It's funny that you called her KB because, honestly, she is much more Fern than KB.
Oh, yeah.
Let's all agree.
I mean, are we going to talk about that? You know, look, who's the main character on the podcast? I'm not sure.
Of the podcast or the show?
Of us.
Oh, okay.
Is it Dan Kat? I don't know. I mean, he doesn't have
the editing.
I don't
think so.
Oh,
I think
okay.
I think I'm the narrator.
It's a hard question, because I think it's a question of, I do think it is, it's probably Dan of, like, the most vanilla, and, like, that's just,
Dan
like...
Dan did have this podcast before we showed up, technically.
I know, yeah.
Technically.
And we're, like, the fun...
Four times.
We're the fun sidekicks, who are, like, potentially more interesting backstories and characters, but I'm being very mean, and I don't mean to be, I'm sorry.
I think that makes me Wim, then, right? Probably.
Okay. I mean, I've been worse than Neil.
I was gonna say, you have some Neil energy.
I have some Neil energy. And
I did turn to Dan while we were watching, saying, "You've got some real Neil energy." While we were watching,
I mean, I think we all have some Neil energy because we're the kind of people that have a Star Wars podcast. And just looking at this group of four kids that we have not actually talked about in an official podcast capacity, of them, the one most likely to have a podcast is Neil. So, you know,
somehow in my head there was like, if Max Rebo is an adult and plays music, then clearly the juvenile version has a podcast.
I'm going to actually go on a limb. I actually think KB is the most likely character out of a podcast.
It's really good, though.
Oh, absolutely. It's very good. It's very good. She gets great like ad revenue, and she like is phenomenal.
Okay. She's monetized.
Well, one out of four is competent. All right,
so
we're here to discuss Skeleton Crew.
Wait, yes. Stormlight 5?
Nope. episodes 1 and 2 both dropped this past week, and we'll take them... I think we'll just take them as a...
As a
you
whole?
Want to do
as
them in reverse order? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So it ends with... Let's talk about Aladdin.
Aladdin?
No.
The Disney movie?
The Aladdin?
Keep going.
Aladdin. Oh, sorry.
Canonically, the planet that AT-ATs are
from. Yeah.
Okay. We have
don't
not
add,
actually
don't add Adam me.
We have not actually gotten to the first frame of episode 1 where there is text on the screen.
Oh man, we're going to talk about a crawl. I didn't sign up for this.
I have like a half page of notes about the crawl.
Oh, good
okay.
For you.
Episode
Wait,
1.
Really? Just on the crawl or in
I
general?
I have four lines.
Episode 1 is entitled This Could Be a Real Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
It is directed by John Watts, who is one of the creators of the show. And written by him and Chris Ford, who is the other creator of the show.
How involved was Dave Filoni with this one?
I don't think he's technically involved. He might have like an executive producer credit of some kind, but I don't think he's actually involved.
Yes,
he's an EP, but he doesn't have any actual...
I like how executive producer can mean almost nothing.
Or everything.
Like, it means they get a paycheck, right? Is that what it basically
almost
means?
Almost certainly.
Yeah, but otherwise, nothing else, right? Like, you may...
Production credit.
Well, he gets a credit. Yeah, like he doesn't need the money because he's employed by Lucasfilms, right? So he doesn't probably get paid additional for a show he doesn't do. Anyways, this is well beyond the the remit of this podcast.
I do wonder how they're compensated. Anyways.
Let us discuss a show in which we open with four young kids on a planet that looks very suburban.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Can I complain for a second?
Dan, just so we're clear, the show doesn't actually open with that. It opens with pirates.
Pirates.
Pirates, and it pulls the Bortles thing again.
She has an explanation for what that means. I'm gonna let her unpack it.
Okay. No, so you lead, and then I'll explain my frustration. I have two frustrations. Let me be very clear.
Since
I really enjoy
the
show
of the Empire, all caps, the New Republic, all caps, has maintained order, and yet remote hyperspace routes are increasingly plagued by piracy. The pirates, all caps, boldly brand their armored hull as a warning to all ships. Surrender or die. Dot space dot space dot.
At the feels, I think your point was, Tony, that this doesn't feel necessary.
And yeah, I tend to agree.
I feel like almost all of this, the only thing they wanted to establish there was this is post Return of the Jedi.
And that they're pirates.
And that there are pirates. But that is a thing that is established literally by the next scene.
You would not have known there were pirates. We could have thought they were affiliated with someone.
Did you see the guy with the eye patch?
Yeah.
Whoa. That's a little judgy.
And like, the parrot?
And the part where he's like, it's been lean times, but we have Bodhi, and, you know.
I speak like this, but I am a lawyer. I am a respected lawyer.
This is a little bit jumping ahead to episode 2. These are not subtle pirates. These are pirates cranked up to 11 on the cartoon pirate meter, and I'm here for it.
It was great.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, there's a scene with pirates and presumably Jude Law. Because otherwise he's not.
But that's exactly the point. That was my frustration, is that like they I don't know if it's meant to be a surprise that it was Jude Law who was the pirate when later he's revealed to be a Jedi.
It's a little confusing to me, and I love this show, but mainly as a like meta thing, because like Jude Law's face is on everything. Like when you go to Disney Plus, it's like, do you want to watch the Skeleton Crew with Jude Law? His face is right here. And Jude Law is not a lot of Jude Law.
30 seconds of
which
these
is
two
fine.
Episodes.
Turns out not a bug.
I mean, it's marketing, right? Jude Law is to draw you in, but it's the story of his
sense. What about the Neil marketing?
Elephants? I'm sure there'll be a lot of good, like,
he's not.
Marketing.
Oh, that is... Woo.
Yeah.
Not elephants.
Star Wars, not known for its merchandising.
Yeah. Anyways, that was my wonderful frustration, having just seen the Acolyte, that we are presented by a masked character who we don't know their identity, and was like, clearly, like, it sounds like Jude Law. It's probably Jude Law. Why is he wearing a mask?
Can I point out that I think what I thought was kind of funny about this opening scene is
it was great. It was hilarious.
It's basically A New Hope, right?
There's a couple
lines verbatim.
Yes. And shot for shot, too.
But
there's some
also
real
to
shots.
Your point about a masked villain whose identity is unknown is like Star Wars 101, man. Like,
also, do not employ a guy named Brutus. Do not make him. They don't have Shakespeare there,
point.
But yeah,
nominative determinism
is named Brutus. Do not make him your second in command.
You know what? I don't trust you, Brutus. You, Judas Iscariot. You be my second in command.
Yeah, no, but even I saw like a dialogue comparison where it's like, you know. Yeah. If this is a bulk freighter, why does it have a mag?
Oh, I was listening to it in my head.
Yeah. And like they literally had the equivalent of Captain Antilles running in and kneeling behind and wearing a similar hat. It was great. It was very funny. And when they found, I will say that was a very funny scene. It got the tone off from a very good start of finding only one credit. It was great. I really,
why do you lock
really
up
enjoyed
one credit. Just insulting.
What was it? Oh, think of the line. Was it mutiny? It is
mutiny. It is. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway,
it's mutiny. So it's to be mutiny then. Something like that. Yeah.
Like
anyways,
that.
That's our
good
introductory scene to set the stakes. There are pirates. Sometimes they don't get
somewhere
lucky.
Sometimes.
Meanwhile, elsewhere in the galaxy, there is a lovely, calm suburb where our friend Wim is reading hollow storybooks about Jedi and wants to be a Jedi, and he and his friend Neil are poor nerds who are getting mocked by the other kids in school.
When they have that lightsaber fight and the bus pulls through and they're just embarrassed in front of all their friends, just had real strong middle school vibes there.
I was unclear, because I can't tell how old any small people are. How old are these children?
I thought sixth grade, but I have nothing to validate
that.
That
feels about
that
right.
That seems
like
about right.
Like
I mean,
10,
like,
11, maybe 12.
You know, like they're walking,
preteen.
Yeah, they're walking to the bus stop by themselves, but they're still, it's not dangerous for them to walk around, but also they're still small and somewhat vulnerable and... You know, and one of them has a crush on somebody else, and very middle school energy, as you said, Kat.
So the biggest things we learn are like this planet, which we still don't know a lot about, is involved in the great work, capital letters implied. Everybody here has really boring jobs.
That was hilarious.
And wants to be the kids want to be
analysts
when they grow up. No fair, I want to be an analyst. Wim dreams of more fun and adventure and all that stuff.
Is told that helping people is not a career by his horrible robot teachers.
Oh, yeah, the robots are We can all agree the robots are kind of sinister, right?
No, this is kind of a lovely utopia dystopia here, where it's like it's the suburbs and everything's nice and people, there's vibrant public transit.
No, but there's still single occupancy vehicles everywhere.
Cat was very upset about that.
I'm sorry.
The complete this is where
some public transit.
Yeah, Captain Marvel, which the Kree planet.
Yeah,
still the best public transit in science fiction that I have seen.
You know who was also in that? Jude Law.
Yeah.
You're totally right.
I am. I wouldn't make it up. That would be a weird thing to invent.
There is some public transit, but there's also like robots everywhere that are like the cops, the teachers. Yeah. They're not great teachers.
No.
And, you know, yeah, it's things are like, you know, they have like, hey, Wim, very nice room for a middle schooler, right? Mm-hmm. Can we agree?
Yeah. Sure.
That room is, I mean, I've lived in apartments smaller than that room.
It had real, the witchy TV show we just watched.
Oh, Agatha.
And the kid in that.
Billy.
Yeah.
Billy. His room also had that similar sort of vibe.
Yeah. But he's like a teen. He
kids are much better at rooms than we were. We also learned that so Wim has his dad, who is a 1980s movie dad of like, I'm too busy, I'm working, here's your lunch money
for the week.
And the mom is not in the picture.
No, I mean, there's a
implied,
you know,
that she's dead.
That she's certainly not there. I mean, there's the very scene where they're on their way back from school and Neil goes into his house and Neil seems to have like, I don't know, like a dozen siblings and is, you know, who love him. And Wim goes home and is like eating cereal by himself in the dark.
I think it was also the line where it's like that absolutely broke my heart, where he asks his dad to read him a bedtime story, and his dad says, "Aren't you old for bedtime stories?" And he's like, "Well, Mom used to." That just broke my heart. So that implies, Mom's not there.
We also have Fern, who is the rebellious kid who is driving her speeder bike all over the place,
very dangerously.
And, yeah, no helmets, anything like that. Taking shortcuts through the woods. She's the rebel.
But also the daughter of...
Also, as we learned, the daughter of the...
Lieutenant governor, whatever.
Administrator.
Undersecretary for something or other.
And also seems like maybe also a single parent. So are we shipping...
Meet cute. I definitely thought there was a meet cute
Wim's dad.
Did she, I didn't totally parse it. She also gets handed something by her mom. Is it like the teaching or the head student award or something like that?
She
was proud of her for.
Yeah, we know that Fern is also clearly very smart, although perhaps downplaying is like trying to downplay that.
Yeah.
Did you notice that she does? It made me think of all shows, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Fern wears her school jacket inside out.
Yes.
Except when she's like,
she changes it at home.
Decloaks into.
Notice that.
Yes, because it's blue when she's out on the bike and it's tan when she's at home, and because it matches all the other kids that have their matching
tan
jackets.
Almost looks like a leather jacket when she's wearing it inside out.
I think it's or she has two jackets.
But it has the crest on it.
I
don't know,
like a tan line. Yeah. So I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure either. But I like that. I like the fact that she has a droid that she has figured out how to reprogram
in the way of
kids everywhere trying to get more screen time.
Yeah.
So our big thing is that there is a career aptitude test happening, which is dictates the rest of your life on this planet, apparently.
I did hear a lot of people who apparently have never taken standardized tests being like, this doesn't make any sense. And I was like, oh, I have bad news for you about school systems.
Yeah, I'm going to be going with not an uncommon idea in some countries, I want to say.
No. Service exam or sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that.
The thing at the when he's late and his dad is like, you're going to be docked 50 points, and so you have to get a perfect score to pass is that's a little bit like, I don't, who knows what that means, but whatever.
So Wim oversleeps, misses his exam, takes a shortcut, finds something in the woods after falling down a ditch that he thinks is a Jedi temple.
Can't manage to climb up the side of the slope, which is like it's a 2% grade.
So this is what we know about hills.
Yeah.
What?
Hills are sometimes very steep.
Yeah. I don't know that.
Sorry, Total Party Kill reference to a too steep hill because Tony doesn't understand how grades work.
They did at least, because, I mean, the person I was watching it with was like, can climb out of that. And then he tries, and it's like, no, he can't. It was poor almost Wim. Like, this ditch is not steep enough. We have to shoot a shot now that proves that he can't climb out. Yeah, otherwise, people are not going to buy it. And then there's even the joke where the robot shows up and is like, you know, you're under school arrest. You know, and it's like, come with me. And he's like, how? And, yeah. You know.
Yeah. Wim gets in trouble. That's where we meet Fern. They're both outside the principal's office in true Calvin Hobbes fashion. Yeah.
I got real, not Breakfast Club, Ferris Bueller's Day Off vibes from that.
Yep. There's a, I feel like that. Definitely 1980s, John Hughes high school movies. Fern overhears the bit about the temple in the woods as, Wim's dad gives him a hard time. And so, we basically have all the kids ending up at the so-called temple.
Skip past where Wim goes to Neil's house and sneaks up on him when he's in the bath.
And it's like a giant awkward bubble bath.
You know, we don't know how his species maintains their skin. We don't know.
But I did enjoy the triplets all watching essentially the we think it was the Christmas special.
Oh, it's the Star Wars holiday special. Yes.
Yeah.
Makes an appearance in
no,
canon.
No, there are.
That feels like Dave Filoni's fault.
Also appreciate the heavy use of wizard.
Yeah, of wizard. Multiple use of wizard. That I feel like you really only needed one wizard. The Easter eggs in this are like heavy. I mean, there's Wim does a I think when he goes back to get the bike when he's late for school, he does an Indiana Jones roll under the the garage door. The kids that are hassling Fern and KB, one of them is named what is he? I wrote it down. Bonge Falfa, which is an American graffiti reference to the character played by Harrison
Bob
Ford.
Falfa.
Oh my
Bob Falfa, who was later like that kind of they Star Warsify that to be Boba Fett later.
Oh my gosh. Yep,
that is a real circular.
No,
yeah.
So the Easter eggs in this are a dangerous quantity.
I miss those. Those are great.
I mean, what's nice about it, I think the show works fine even if you don't see those, and they don't super get in the way.
The bike, too, with the streamers, like, there's some very strong E.T. vibes. Like, I feel like this, and we'll talk about this, too, but, like, I feel like this really captures the feeling of the 80s. I got some Goonie vibes in there. It's nice.
Specifically, fictional 80s.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Not just the 80s, but fictional 80s.
Fictional 80s.
Yeah.
many of us lived through the 80s. It was not entirely like this, but it wasn't entirely unlike this, either. So all the kids find the temple and
unclaimsies.
I enjoyed the bit where the girls convince the boys to like Tom Sawyer them, I think as Kat put it, into digging out the door. Yeah. They find their way in after KB hacks the door open, and we're inside what is not a temple, but eventually revealed to be a starship. Mm-hmm. There are some additional questions here that we haven't quite figured out about the fact that nobody seems to know about starships.
Nope.
And that they seem weird and rare on this planet.
There's some lines in the next episode.
They know they exist, but there are several places.
I wasn't sure. They call them starships, not spaceships. Was that a weird thing, or is that how?
No, they call them in Star Wars, you know, in New Hope, they call them the Millennium Falcon a starship.
Got it.
But there is something where they're like, later on they talk about the starships not being in there, but they also seem kind of unfamiliar. We're like, whoa, this is a starship. Not like in every other Star Wars thing, it's like, this is just like, those are trucks that we just use to get back and forth between two planets. What's your deal? Like,
then there's stuff that comes right after they get off the planet. One is like, they're worried about hitting the barrier, which we don't know. And
we see in the sky all the lights.
Yep. Yeah. And then they had never seen stars before.
Yes.
That was super weird.
Yeah. Especially if they're in a show that's about a war in them, so.
So they're going around the ship, and they're Fern and Wim particularly seem to be butting heads. Wim goes off to the cockpit while the rest of them are trying to figure out how to turn on the power to get out the door.
There's skeletons everywhere, which has very strong Goonies vibes. Also, when they go into the there's the captain's,
that's next episode.
I think that's next episode. Yeah, second episode.
Okay, fair enough. Oh wait, I've already got there, but
I liked one bit here, which is there's a great shot where the KB disappears and they're like trying to figure out where she is, and then she pops up through a hatch in the floor, like the only person who's competent in this entire group.
Yeah. She talks about it in her podcast all the time.
Yeah, all the time. And you believe these people I have to hang out with. No, they do a lot very quickly to establish the roles of these four people and how they're interacting, and I mean, I like it. I like, you know, Neil, like, he, you know, Wim feels betrayed, but when Neil wants to go along with the girls, and Neil's just like, I just want to go home. I don't like that we're in an we're sealed in an underground thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and KB sometimes gives Fern, you know, doesn't feel great about how mean Fern can be. I mean, it's great. They do a lot in
good
a
dynamics.
Very short amount of time
yeah.
to establish the dynamics between
and
these
the kids are all excellent actors too.
Yes.
Like I think
yes.
Disney's shown themselves very good at both identifying casting and then directing between this and the young Leia show.
Yeah.
Also known as Obi-Wan.
Wim eventually can't resist hitting a green blinking button, which
we've
makes
all been there.
The entire ship burst out of the ground, take off. To the distraught nature of Wim's dad, who has tracked him into the woods, and the ship zoops off through the barrier, gets into space, and jumps into hyperspace for the end of episode one, which is quite the good cliffhanger there.
Yeah. Should we talk about episode two? Or do you want to discuss episode one?
No, we continue. Episode two, which is called Way, Way Beyond the Barrier. Basically starts off with our kids trying to figure out how to fly the ship, which they don't know how to do, but they meet a droid who has been reactivated and has a little mouse who lives in his missing eye.
Yeah.
A delightfully piratical droid voiced by none other than Nick Frost.
Yep.
And he basically is going to throw them out the airlock until Fern convinces him that she is actually the captain because she killed the last captain.
The streak of viciousness she has is a little terrifying.
No, this is, that's a kid that's going to be, raise a lot of venture capital someday. I like that the droid's name, SM-33,
Smee.
Classic pirate name.
Oh, I just got that. That's great.
Yeah, I love that. And it's a very piratey droid. I was unclear if what model droid he is, because he looks a lot like the K2SO.
But he's not quite that.
We don't know what year the ship is from. And
no,
this is where
they went through, when
they go into the captain's room, like there's a legit telescope in there and like a legit captain's pirate hat from like Pirates of the Caribbean that makes me question like why
when are they find out later that basically that guy was just like really into cosplay
or they're actors, they're all actors,
yes.
They're from their way fake skeletons
to, yeah.
SM-33 doesn't know how to get them back home but can basically pilot the ship and takes them to an outpost,
Port Borgo,
where they end up splitting up and trying to figure out how to get home.
Tortuga energy.
Yes,
yep.
It's
very strong Tortuga.
Yeah.
We have a bunch of different encounters there, including a dancer who tries to convince Fern and KB that they're in a lot of trouble and need
to go
home. You're
being trafficked. Call your parents.
And that's where I think we start getting hit. They do a good job, I think, this episode, like increasing the sense of like something's weird about the planet they're from. Like, we have the bear and the stars, and then no one is. Every time they say Atten or Aladdin, they they get people like, "What are you talking about? That's very funny."
Yeah, it's like you're from Atlantis, basically.
Right.
Yeah. We also get. I totally just blanked my train of thought there, which was also another.
So they meet that. They go to the little restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And run into trouble there. Space ramen. Yep.
Yep.
Ah, the other thing I was going to mention, which was when they first arrive at the port,
the ferryman.
They point out aliens. They identify everybody else as aliens.
Yeah.
Which is odd because Neil is not human, clearly.
Yeah. Rude.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they showed Neil and Wim had a nice kind of like, mildly diverse space school with like an Athorian and some Rhodians and some other folks there. But yeah, apparently Alatin is not the most, it's not Tatooine levels of diverse and nowhere near Port Borgo's level.
So the kids basically try to get, when Wim pays for, as you said, for this food, they
use old
Republic credits, which are apparently very valuable and surprising. So several people try to grab them. They make a run for it. SM33 shows up to try and save them all. Also, Fern has a blaster that she got from somewhere.
Oh, I missed that.
She shoots it in the air at one point.
Yeah. Like... she doesn't have a very long
She makes a game attempt there.
Vane from The Mandalorian takes
Vane
it from
The Mandalorian, yeah, shows
did not,
up. That...
did not think
I think
that
I knew
was a character
he was
we
be
needed
here.
To be back, yeah. But okay, whatever.
But eventually the kids are overpowered. SM33 is, after giving it a pretty good go, is disabled. And the kids are thrown in the brig, but not killed outright because there does seem to be...
Oh, man. I do love, though, first, though, they do convince their mouse to try to rescue the key. And again, in very strong, getting the dog from
Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah.
But then the mouse just runs away, which I really enjoyed. Yeah. And then from out of the shadows comes a ruggedly handsome man who turns out he might have the Force.
Yeah. Jude Law
but
shows up.
But I don't trust him because I'm pretty sure he might be the captain.
Hovers the keys through the door.
And it's like, why didn't you do that before?
Right,
that was my thought as well.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Which makes me think that he's setting them up to basically calm them.
Is it possible he has an electromagnet?
That is also what I thought about, too. Either A, I think he's conning them.
I think it's going to start out conning them, but he has a heart of gold.
A heart of gold, yeah. I mean, I didn't think they were going to murder those four kids. That would be
that would have been a real twist.
Dark season two, and now the rest of the show is just about pirates.
Well, how amazing would it be if it's actually like, guys, this is actually the season premiere of Andor. You just don't know it.
Jeez, dark. Instead, they just put them in jail, and you know the dirt is really dirty. And apparently, there's another guy in there with them, but. But yeah, you know, I mean, that wolf guy is going to talk to them in a day or two. And they've still got the money in their, Wim still has the money in his sock.
In his shoes, yeah.
Yeah. I did, so, all right, this is, we like to cover Star Wars financial analysis.
Yep.
How can old money be valuable?
If it's made of, think of it on being on the gold standard. So
okay,
I like
so
to think that it's like pressed platinum.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
So it's probably a high value metal in the universe.
I want it to be like a collector's item, like buffalo nickels or something. Like, oh man, I need these Roll for Public Lettuce to complete my collection.
Because usually
that's possible.
Obsolete
it's be one
money
of those two things.
Has no value, right? Because I mean,
yeah. So it's either
spoiler money. Money only has agreed upon value.
Yeah. So it's either it's either gonna be historical value or it's like a high or it's a valuable mineral.
All right. So let's enter two conspiracy corner points. One, we've already addressed whether or not Jude Law is the helmeted figure from the beginning.
I almost certainly is. I think
unlikely.
But then the question really is going on that is like, is so there?
He wasn't a great pirate. He led them to a vault with one coin in it, and they immediately...
He got the gold, though. He got the gold. It's a binary yes or no. But
that's got some real strong, I'm the captain of a pirate crew energy cat.
But I think the real question I have is, what is Jude Law's motivation? And the fact that, like, was he set up by his crew now that the other pirates heard they're from at Atten and decided we're going to use Jude Law to basically be a honeypot with the kids to figure out where it is?
Like, how long ago?
What do you call that then?
We're not going there.
No. Like, how long ago did that scene where he got mutinied take place, right?
True.
Because he's in, like, rags
by now.
Yeah.
Like,
20 minutes later.
I'm sick of being in the scab of planet.
Enjoy. Throw him in the brig. What's a brig?
What's a brig?
Yeah.
What's the second conspiracy theory?
What is the deal?
With At
Atten. What's the deal
with Atten?
Well, what is the great work? I had some theories. My theory I advanced to Cat while watching was, what if they were the home of the First Order?
Oh, God. That's way worse than any of my theories.
I like that idea. It's very depressing.
Yeah.
I don't know if they would go that way, but like there is something sinister about everything that's going on there, right?
You know, and they drop it in little bits and pieces, right? There's mentions to the barrier is mentioned in the classroom. When there's a scene in episode two where Wim's dad is like in the woods and the droids find him, and it's like, why are they out looking for him?
Yeah.
And he's like, there was a starship, and they basically quote him laws that said, like, that's not possible.
There's no starships allowed.
No starships allowed. Yeah. And so. Yeah, like
that's
maybe things
weird.
Aren't so great. Yeah.
Plus, the great work feels sinister to me, right? Like, everybody works on the great work, and like,
well, they're all statisticians or analysts, right?
I guess, but like, what is the great work? Like, what are they doing? What are they? Are they building something? Is this more of like a societal thing?
So presumably, the Empire put them here, right? Like, a long time ago, right?
If they've got old Republic credits,
it's
possible.
Pre-Empire, it feels like.
No, they could be like early Empire.
I guess.
Right. Because it's old Republic credits, not...
But are they... Like, what confused me, too, is because they had the reference in the crawl to the New Republic, but it feels like these people don't know about the New Republic.
No. And they don't know about... Well, they don't know about anything outside of Atten.
Yeah,
right? And they don't seem surprised, though. They don't feel like they're trapped on Atten either, right? There's no conversation of even leaving it. So the question is, do they even know there's other galaxies out there?
Wim has an iPad with like comic books about the
Jedi
on it. So it's
but
like if you're
Republic
running,
Jedi?
I don't know. There was like an image of the Jedi on a Rancor, but maybe that was just a legend.
I
was
meaning
that like if you're running like these people, like maybe let's say that these people are going to become the human computers that run the Death Star or something like that, right?
Yeah.
It seems like maybe you wouldn't let them have Star Wars Jedi comic books.
TM. Yeah, I mean, and I thought for a bit when I was first like looking at him reading it that it was like maybe it was the story of Luke and Vader kind of like, but I don't think so.
Yeah. I do like the idea that it is something more sinister.
Yeah.
Because I think that gives a very good like twist halfway through the show.
Well, it's fun that they're playing with it already because it seems like it's a twist where it's like you guys are actually from the planet with the secret treasure.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
That's why it's great, right? That's a really fun twist.
You're going off and need to find it, and in fact, maybe kind of works as a plausibility thing in terms of like Neil wants to go home, and it's like, well, we want to find the treasure. It would be nice if those were the same place.
Yeah.
How do we convince Neil to stick this out for 6 more episodes?
Yeah. A really good, it's a fun twist there to say like it's the they're the ones who know. Yeah, exactly what you said.
Yeah, they are the treasure.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much more we are going to see with Fern's mom and Wim's dad. Like, are they going to appear in other episodes?
There are other shots in the trailer of the two of them being like, we need to get these kids back.
And maybe they will discover, maybe they'll find something about how their society fits together. That's,
fairly high up, we know.
Yeah.
So
yeah, she's
she
the undersecretary,
feels like,
I thought,
yeah, they feel like she should know something about what's going on.
Well, she even has the line that's very sinister. Is there, after the whole speech of like, everyone has a place in the great work, as Fern's going up the staircase and says, like, there's not room at the top for everyone.
It's true. She meant at the top of the house.
Yeah,
it's a very small room.
Yep. But yeah, it'd be cool.
Also, KB, Cyborg, little Lobot vibe happening there.
Yeah.
Maybe just nearsighted. We don't know.
It's true.
I mean, she just might.
I'm just curious.
Could have
know.
Been something medically earlier. Or
She flips that visor up and down a bunch.
I kind of enjoy that. I enjoy that it's not just you can't see her eyes, but she's just like, it's sometimes there and sometimes not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She also has real, she can plug into things, which is cool, similar to our good friend Echo.
Echo. Yeah. She's got a PA system built into her head, so that's cool that you can use to prank people.
That was hilarious.
Yeah,
I caught onto that slightly faster than Dan, which was great.
Not immediately.
Who do you have a crush on? They did a good job writing for kids too. I appreciate that.
No, they did.
The script is good too, and felt very appropriate for the children, which was wonderful.
And I'm enjoying. We talk about the dynamic a bit, and I think what I'm looking forward to, especially coming out of episode 2, as we sort of ramp up a bit, is having the kids be a more cohesive unit. Mm-hmm. Like, we've taken the time to have all their differences shown out and the things that, like,
well, and this is,
we've got KB and Fern and we've got Neil and Wim, but the two groups don't exactly go together yet. But like, and especially Fern and Wim have very, lots of clashing, but they're going to need everybody to work together. And I'm kind of looking forward to them becoming a crew in that sense. The vibes of the show that it reminds me the most of. Tony, you want to take this one? Recent show, bunch of kids find a starship.
Rescue Rangers.
Rescue Rangers it is.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Star Trek Prodigy.
Oh,
also a show about a bunch of kids who find a starship.
And
Space Camp.
Yeah,
and have a robot friend that tells
and
them
have
how
a
to
robot
do so.
Friend. That's right.
Janeway is basically a space pirate.
But I like that
from
that
a certain point of view.
That show also did a really good job of taking a bunch of kids who have like they start out having their differences and they have like conflict. but they eventually gel into a family of kinds.
They've been thrown in the brig. Like, I think this was your classic moment where, like, they go to clearly a very dangerous place. And, you know, multiple establishing shots to show you how dangerous this space Tortuga is. And then they don't stick together.
They don't stick together.
They try to. And it's interestingly, it's Fern that loses them first, which is awesome. Yeah. I didn't expect that. And I think that shows also that she is, I think many places that she seems very competent, but she's also very cocky.
Does she look out for other people, right? Is she a leader or is she just loud? Did she look around and expect, oh, no one was following me? I'm not that lost. But also I am lost.
No, I'm looking forward to them gelling together. I'm looking forward to seeing kind of, we're talking about, like, what is going to be the overarching plot of the show. I like the characters, I like the script, I like the directing, I like the feel, I like everything, and what are we going to go with this? There's a whole bunch of ways it could go, in my mind, this is currently, other than Andor, this is, I think, the most enjoyable Star Wars I've seen yet.
Go ahead, Tony.
This knows so strongly what it wants to be.
Yeah.
And is just doing that, right?
It's like Andor, right?
It's hard. We were at times hopeful about various other Star Wars shows that we watched. We usually start out being like, we hope it does this. We just want you to be successful, Star Wars. We just want the best for you. But there, you know, we've always been like, we don't really know what they're doing, right?
Why are we back on Tatooine?
Why are we on Tatooine?
I was going to say, it benefits a lot from having a very, you know, I think what you would call in Hollywood, a high concept, right?
Yes.
Like, bunch of kids on a treasure hunt and find a missing spaceship or whatever, like pirates, you know, like Goonies and Star Wars, if you want to just call
I'm
that.
Sure
that
this is
a
pitch.
High concept pitch.
Goonies and Star Wars. That was how they pitched it.
And
Goonies in space.
I think that bodes space well goodies. Because if you ask somebody to sum up, say, for example, The Acolyte in one sentence, what is that show about? Yeah.
Really good martial arts with a very attractive man.
Yeah. I mean, I could imagine it got pitched as like Star Wars Rashomon, but then if they walked out of the pitch meeting and they're like, now we got to figure out what that means.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, we've got the check under our arm.
Star Wars Rashomon versus Star Wars Goonies. Like, one of them is like, okay, it's Star Wars, but it's a Japanese art film.
Yeah, there's some Star Wars and Goonies synergy there that works really
how
well
do you think
together.
They pitched Ahsoka.
Dave Filoni's like, I just want to do this show.
Yeah. Dave Filoni is like, what if more Clone Wars but live action?
I mean, which sounds, hey. Sounds great. What I was going to say was I feel like I'm with you. Like, the show has a very high degree of confidence. Yeah. I watched there was a little round table with a bunch of the directors. And by the way, the director's cast on this is stacked. I mean, John Watts, who did the first episode and it also, I think, the last one, also did all three Tom Holland Spider-Man movies. Episode 2 and 3 are both directed by my personal favorite pick here, David Lowery, who's done a bunch of different movies, but one that Kat and I watched recently was The Green Knight, which weird as hell.
So
movie.
Good.
I have
so
not seen
good.
It. I know people
it's
like it.
It's weird. I
it's
love it.
Very weird and not the kind of guy you would pick. Next week he did. Well,
didn't you have a quote about him, like, when he was making The Green Knight, kept referencing The Phantom Menace?
Yes, and they're like, stop talking about this. Apparently, a big Star Wars fan. But also, apparently, a bunch of them are all like friends from college. Episode 4 is directed by the Daniels, who are directed Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Oh, good.
Episode 5 is directed by Jake Schreier, who is the director of the upcoming Thunderbolts, Marvel Thunderbolts. Oh.
Bob.
Episode 6 is Bryce Dallas Howard, who's the only one who's done the previous one.
You're not legally allowed to do Star Wars without her around anymore.
She's
basically.
Great, I like her directing.
Episode 7 is Lee Isaac Chung, who did do, I think, a Mandalorian episode, but also directed both Twisters, the recent Twister sequel.
Got good reviews.
And Minari, which is like a big
art film.
Yeah, autobiographical film about coming of age film. That is a wild group of people.
I feel like there is a theme in there, in addition to it being a wild group. A bunch of them have done things that are like coming of age or child geared thing, which I think is probably really
totally
important
right about that.
To get that right.
Well, Minari had child actors. Yeah, a lot of them
did. It's good scaffolding for telling a story, right? And like, that's what Star Wars is too, to a certain degree, is a coming of age story for Luke, you know, in the original trilogy, and even for Anakin in the prequel, if you want to go that way.
I think about it too. Like, one of the things that's always stuck with me, bear with me a second, is for Knives Out, right? You hear stories about the cast, and you often hear like when a shot ends, everyone goes back to the trailers. But Knives Out, all the actors hung around, just had a really good time with each other, and that was like, I think one of the things that comes across really well in the film is how well that cast gels. And I think I have heard that Jude Law is a very good sort of mentor on set and likes working with children and coaching them and helping them. And I think he also, probably did something here with the kids too, because he did that previously right before this, right?
Right. David Lowery, who directed The Green Knight, also directed Jude Law in a Peter Pan version for Disney Plus.
Because he has literally played Captain Hook, right?
Yes. And so he had directed that just before this.
So wait, it was basically like, do you want to come do more space pirates with
Jude
children?
Law? And he's like, yeah, I've done that.
That's literally the same thing. He's doing the same thing. He's Captain Hook in space. It's literally Captain Hook in space.
But I have also seen there were videos they showed that like the kids all having like a good time on set and doing stuff. And the actor, I've forgotten his full name, but Ravi is the actor who plays Wim. And they showed like one day, I think maybe it was for Halloween, they all came... All the kids came dressed up as members of the crew, and Ravi came as John Watts with like a Starbucks coffee and a beard. Like, and they had a shot of him, and I was like, "That kid's great. Love that kid."
Is there a kid inside? Is I don't even know. Is Wim a person in
Neil.
A suit?
Neil.
Is Neil a person
is
in a suit?
Combination of suit and CGI, I believe.
Okay.
Like, I think there are some practical effects, but that the face is largely CGI.
I'm amazed. Andy Serkis plays a kid, so no. Wait, who is the actual kid playing?
Playing Neil?
Yeah. Also, the other, I know we're just talking about like shows with the kids recently, but I will say, no. But seriously, I don't know how many people watched Willow.
That's a good show.
Yeah, I watched Willow.
It was a show that got better and better and better.
It did.
Very sad it got canceled because I really liked it. But that also has a very similar vibe to me for this.
Yeah.
Which, again, was also very much channeling the 80s, so that really isn't a surprise.
Now, Kat, I'm curious, because when we watched, what did we watch? The last season of The Bad Batch with Omega, or Omega, depending on which hemisphere you're in, you had a hard time with the kind of child in danger aspects of that. How do you feel about how I was thinking about you while watching this in terms of, like, how is this one?
This, to me, feels totally different. Because it feels like in this time, the kids have agency, and they're not being manipulated, they're not being captured, they're not being, like, they weren't ripped away from their parents, and they're also older.
They literally were ripped away
from their parents. No, but, like, they're middle schoolers, it's still, like, the show is very much a safe show, you know it's going, like, to end up with a happy ending. It was a baby. They ripped a baby away from their parents. Like, that was, and we saw the scene where they ripped a baby away from a parent. Like,
and Pirate Jail, where you get the key in 20 minutes, is a little different than, like, you were in space, like hospital jail with people observing you behind glass walls.
Yeah,
like,
this is that was to- much, and
this is literally more cartoony.
The most escapist.
This is like even though, shipwrecked or long, like,
even though this is live action and that was a cartoon.
Yeah. No, right. Feels very different.
FYI, you asked me who played,
thank you for asking though.
Who played Neil? His name is Robert Timothy Smith. I'd like you to picture what you think Neil would look like if he were a human. And the answer is, like, he looks exactly like you would think.
He's got strong Neville Longbottom vibes.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. I love Neville Longbottom. He seems like a very, they're all very good. I've really enjoyed the kid. They did a great job casting the kids.
It's great when you can get, and you know, I mean, I think I don't like to pick on child actors because they're, you know, they're young
people,
and that seems like a hard job because being a kid is already pretty rough. But you know, there are some amazing ones out there, and I'm sure, you know, some of them get better direction and better writing than other ones. I recently finished the Penguin series, and there's a couple episodes that have the Penguin as a young boy, and the kid they have playing young Penguin, real good. So
I was getting all the kids, I think, have been in other stuff.
So this is not
So like, They've been in a few different things, and so I think they're all fairly experienced as far as kids go. So
that's good.
Man, I just learned that David Lowery is like 8 months younger than me. God, I hate when that happens.
J.D. Vance is younger than you.
I don't need to hear that from anything. I don't need to hear that name on this show. All right.
Well, just no, because he's vice president.
Seemed like
a very specifically targeted dig at Dan. I don't know.
No, because the clearly the thought process was that some are younger than me. Are you giving me the quiet duck?
I'm just, yeah. It is. It was hard when there was a Doctor Who that's younger than you. That's a, you know.
Oh, there's so many now, though.
Well, I mean, for you, but for me.
Yeah.
I was the
Peter,
same age.
Peter Capaldi was just.
J.D. Vance is older than me. So.
Wait, really?
I don't know. I haven't looked at this album, mainly just saying words to hurt Dan. Dan is older than me.
I think J.D. Vance is younger than me.
Oh, well, then let's burn it all down.
Oh, yeah, he's young. No, he's older than Cap, but he's younger than both me and Tony.
Sorry, Dan had mentioned someone who was 8 months younger than him, who therefore is older than me, but younger than Dan.
All right.
Oh, yeah, yes. Yep. Okay, yeah.
Glad we talked about this on our Star Wars show that's about lovely escapists pirates.
Dan will edit all this out. So, yeah.
Maybe. There's no way to know. Anything else we want to say or...
Did we get any mail about these episodes?
We
just
have
aired?
Some mail. Thank Ooh, you for asking.
What's up with the mail?
Yeah.
And the White Dance one, I'm assuming this was filmed on the volume?
It is.
Okay.
It was, at least in part.
It feels, I would say, the one, it's good. I don't have a lot to say about the set design. Like, it's cute. It works. It's great. It's not a big distraction. I like the houses. The houses are gorgeous. I actually really love the house design a lot. Very mid-century modern. Gorgeous. But
Cat,
very cool.
Cat, it's a dystopia, just to remind you. But it's a classy dystopia.
Is it classy? All the exposed wood?
Yeah.
Beautiful open concept.
I think it's
they
served...
harvest your blood, but you know, you get to live in one
houses.
Of those houses.
See that table? I think it's helped by the fact that there's a lot of interior stuff, a lot of stuff on sets. The ship is clearly very well built out, and I think we'll probably explore more of that as the show goes.
Port Borgo felt a little volumey to me.
That's what I was
but
like,
it also was like a space station
it's
in the middle
fine.
Of nowhere.
I don't need it to be like, again, Andor's Andor. I have nothing to write home about other than the beautiful house design.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. You know.
I did enjoy the little fairy Muppet who wants to get paid. that was fun.
Did you recognize what he is?
He looked like something from... Is he the same creature that's with the lady who is on Tatooine who fixes...
No. He's the thing, I forget what they're called, but from those direct-to-TV Ewok
the
movies.
The Ewok movies.
Yeah, things that are not Ewoks that are friends with the Ewoks. He's one of those.
Oh, does this mean the Ewok movies are now canon?
It doesn't mean they're not canon.
I don't know, Kat. It just means those things are canon.
All right. I'm looking at our various... We are on Mastodon. We're ACP at Zeppelin.flights.
We will get a Blue Sky account. We just don't have one yet. If you want to suggest a name for us, let us know.
No, it'll just be at ACP.
What if it's already taken?
It's not. Well, it might be. I was scrolling through to see if anybody had asked any questions on Mastodon. Okay, all right. So this is from Akshay. Sorry, I apologize for mispronouncing your name. What is going on with the urban design of Ataden? There are monorail tracks on all roads, so why is the road so wide?
Yeah.
The tram enters a below-grade section after driving straight through a busy intersection. There seems to be no tram stop anywhere in sight. Everyone drives, but there's no parking at the school. How did a whole testing center full of kids get there? Wow, this is someone who really targeted Kat.
Okay, so let's go through this.
Kat, do you have some slides to show us?
First off, monorails are silly. The way I interpret this is that isn't actually public transportation. That is a school bus, and the school bus is electrified. I'd still surprise them aren't using rails and not like any sort of... it makes zero
everything
sense.
Everything else floats.
It makes zero sense what is going on there, other than I take it as a school bus, and maybe for some reason it's very easy and cheap for them designed to this one school bus, which does imply to a broader conversation that it is a dystopian future that is like heavily top-down planning rather than any bottoms-up planning, like from sort of like a planned city.
Those suburbs had very like 1950s planned.
But it also implies that the kind of downtown is also heavily planned.
Yeah.
And it reminds me, if you guys are ever familiar with like Chandigarh, which is a city in India that I'm going to mispronounce, it's Corbusier?
Corbusier.
He actually planned the city and it has a very, in some ways, similar vibes. It's just like broad, wide open boulevards. It's a beautiful city. But makes no sense. The public transit on this planet makes zero sense whatsoever. And I don't think it's public transit. That is, I actually just think it's a school bus that's on.
Well,
a monorail.
Makes sense. You have a bunch of kids who need to get to school somehow,
yeah.
Right?
So. I did like. We did not talk about the school bus driver. Was very great.
Star Tours robot.
Yeah.
Captain is Rex, Star the Tours, original Captain Rex.
Is Star Tours still a thing you can go to, or has that been replaced by other stuff?
There is a modern version of it, which is I've ridden it many a time.
Don't go out anymore. I get too motion sick.
It doesn't bother me.
I've never been.
Well, maybe we should go for somebody's birthday. Is there a big birthday coming up? And we got a big birthday coming up.
Yeah, mine next year.
Oh, there we go.
Probably.
Oh, wait, yours next year.
Yeah. Anyway, we've got some email.
21's your next big birthday.
They're all big birthdays, Scott.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Multiple of five.
Well, one more than Dan. Okay. I'm 1 year younger than Dan.
So you are older than JD Vance.
No one, okay. There are now too many mentions of him to take out, and it pains me.
Yeah, I thought this was a safe place.
Trevor writes in.
Trevor!
Hi, Kat, Dan, and Tony. As a new Star Wars TV show is about to start and we are all out of moonlighting references, I wanted to present a nonsense question.
I really meant to watch one episode of Moonlighting while we were not watching any Star Wars, and I feel bad that I have watched it.
I just totally forgot about that entire thing until right now.
Someone put it, I did not write this in because it was not a question, but somebody added us on Mastodon to say that Moonlighting was on sale. anyways. They've recently replaced the 2026 Star Wars movie slot on the Disney calendar, to clarify, with Ice Age 6 for the new Disney lineup.
Why are they on 6?
What if Ice Age 6 isn't actually a sequel to the animated film, but actually the subtitle for the new Star Wars movie? Perhaps it's like SETI Alpha 5 in that Ice Age 6 is the name of a planet. So could the full title of the film be Star Wars Ice Age 6? Please feel free to tell me how I'm insane and wrong. I just enjoy fun conversation. Seriously, what do you think is going on behind the scenes with the scheduling? Thanks for all you do.
What do you think? So if there was a Star Wars movie called Ice Age.
It's back to Hoth.
No, back to Hoth.
Pitch me on it. What happens in this?
I'll go second. I don't think it's Hoth.
First of all, how do you feel about Wampas? Do you feel like you had enough Wampa? Like, do you like character development? There's a one-armed Wampa, maybe roaming the ice fields of Hoth.
This is
riding a Tauntaun.
Information I wish I did not have in my head. There was actually a lot more Wampa content in Empire Strikes Back that was scripted, that was cut for special effects reason. There was supposed to be like a minor Wampa subplot about Wampas in the base.
Yep.
And there was like there's literally like a
you
room.
You can see the photos of some of it because they did get, they
there's
did
supposed
shoot
to be a scene where
stuff.
like stormtroopers, when the base is getting attacked, accidentally go
they
into the Wampa
sign,
room.
They rip a sign off. 3PO rips a sign off in one. I think that actually is in a scene. There's like a bit at the end of a scene where 3PO rips a sign off the wall. And that's supposed to be a whole thing about a room full of Wampas.
I just wish
that makes
the
radio drama.
I knew slightly less about things that weren't in a Star Wars movie.
I always
and then I could replace that with knowledge of things that were in the movie.
I always appreciate that a little bit because it's about the notes you don't play.
In this case, it was Wampas for
about the Wampas you don't play.
Yeah. So my pitch was going to be that it's actually it's an old Republic story.
Oh,
and it's classy. About terraforming on Tatooine,
which
used to have polar caps and then was terraformed into terraforming by
air.
We
haven't greenlit a Tatooine show in 6 months.
Exactly.
We're
required, like Sony and Spider-Man, to do one every 12 months.
George Lucas' contract that he wrote when we bought all this stuff from him had that one loophole in it that gets us every time.
But that would be terraforming gone wrong by the Old Republic, how we got to Tatooine.
Is there an Ice 9 connection there?
That's why Ice Age 6, yeah.
Mm. Okay. And is it like in the Star Wars Lego thing where...
It's like the Vonnegut Star Wars crossover, there's just not enough of those.
Where Tatooine is actually like a beach town.
Well, I did really... Did we ever do the podcast on that? Mos Eisley Cantina Marina?
Yeah.
There are.
That makes me laugh every
week. Are half a dozen good jokes in there.
There are.
Did we finish it?
We did not finish it.
I finished it. It's fine. I think it's probably intended to keep children entertained.
Yeah, it does have
the
perhaps
sophisticated media that is
the best Greedo appearance in an and a TV show.
Anyways, what was your pitch, Tony, for Ice Age 6, Star Wars Ice Age 6?
You know, I think what if it is, it's about like shipping wars between people that are used, they're space truckers, and they're, all their goods are frozen in carbonite.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Reefer cars.
I like that.
Space yeah, and cars. It's you know, it's a lot of like long haul trucking space.
Is antics. It like the space trucking episode of Cowboy Bebop?
I was trying to think of something that wasn't the space trucking episode
Good luck.
Of Cowboy Bebop, and that was like, where have trucks come up in fiction before? And that was the only thing I could come up
isn't
with.
Ice trucking...
That is not the best episode of that show.
No.
Isn't ice trucking something?
There's an Ice Road Truckers is like a Discovery Channel.
Ice Age Truckers, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I was in Anchorage once a long time ago, and like a whole bunch of them were in town. I ended up at a bar with them. It was weird, man. It was super
I think that
weird.
That's from that era of like The Deadliest Catch, where it was can we take shows that like where people about jobs where people die during that into entertainment for the rest of America? Anyway, capitalism.
Yeah. Jay writes in.
Hey, Jay.
Subject line, this show is so wizard. I hope you all enjoyed the first two episodes as much as I did. I really liked all the details, the suburban lifestyle of kids going to school, and the Star Wars universe was fascinating. I was very dubious when I first heard that was how it started, but honestly, they could have spent an extra episode establishing their home life. I'd love to see more of the mundane life in a galaxy far, far away. The set designs are great. Also, the ship looks fantastic, and there's so much going on in the background in the pirate spaceport that's going to need at least another viewing where I'll be ignoring the action in the foreground.
There are
lots of comments.
Look for it in when they pull up to Port Borgo, and there's all the ships, tethered and whatnot. There is what I enjoy. I feel like I don't usually catch these things, but there is the original version of the Millennium Falcon, which they rejected and then like became the blockade runner.
Blockade runner. Yeah.
So it's like it's the blockade runner, but with the Millennium Falcon cockpit on the front of it.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I feel also, like I never catch those otherwise.
If you want more like a domestic life in Star Wars, I again strongly recommend just following Cyril Karn's plot for most of Andor.
Mundane. You still working on your Cyril Karn supercut? That's just the scenes in his apartment
eating cereal.
Yep.
Serial Kondia. There were lots of comments about it being Goonies in space, but now that I've seen the show, I think I agree, and it's totally not in a disparaging way. I'm all here for Pirates of the Galaxy, mm-hmm. especially when Nick Frost started talking like a pirate. So far, it's a simpler premise than Andor or The Acolyte, and I don't mind. There's enough room for the complex intrigue of Andor alongside a fun show about kids trying to find their way home. So far, I have no complaints. Well, just one. I want to binge the rest of the season right now instead of having to wait until January to see it all.
Me too. It's fun. It's also a very, full credit to the release schedule. This is a great Christmas show, right?
Yeah.
I did see somebody noting, like, why didn't they release an episode last week right before Thanksgiving? Because that felt like you're going home for the holidays and want to watch something with people. It feels like a good get everybody in, but I think they want to schedule. Yeah, schedules are what they are. But yeah, I agree as well. I think, again, all things we've said, it seems to really have a lot of confidence in its storytelling, and that shows. Finally, David writes, welcome back, guys. I can't wait to hear your takes on Skeleton Crew and to see what I missed. I'm not sure whether these questions were subtle enough to qualify for Conspiracy Corner. Maybe more like Intrigue Nook. One, AT-ATTEN isn't really part of the New Republic, is it? I mean, it's part of a different entity with the same name from the New Republic we see in Mandalorian and Force Awakens. If it was the same government, surely the pirates and world in general wouldn't think it's a myth. Two, Jude Law is the masked pirate from the prologue, right?
Yeah.
Maybe
I don't think that's much of a
strike through. Clearly, I'm too old and jaded to just appreciate things on their face, but if it's a secret, it didn't seem like they tried very hard.
I agree.
I was honestly surprised about Darth Bortles and the Acolyte, but this seemed weak. Three, add another tick to Star Wars universe makes incredibly durable spaceships, but poor medical technology list.
All right, good new to conspiracy. Have you. You notice that the ship was crashed upside down.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
What if all of AT-ATTEN is upside down?
Whoa.
Also, the tree is full of roots. So, like, clearly.
It's been there a long time.
Yeah, but it also means that there's a hole breach.
Structural integrity has been compromised.
There has to have been a hole breach.
Or there's a tree growing in Brooklyn? No, in the ship. Glad to have you in Star Wars back. Have a happy holiday from Food Science Dave. Yeah, no, it's good. I like the upside down ship thing. I tweaked to that pretty fast when they were inside, but I do like it as a detail that it then had to like turn over.
It's nice.
That barrier doesn't seem very effective if a ship can just fly right through it, right?
I mean, I guess it's a visual barrier, not a...
It could also... Oh, yeah. What if it's like a cloaking field?
Or how did that... You know, that's a good guess. Or how did the ship get there?
Well, that's a question of like, was the ship special to get the barrier? Is the barrier not really a barrier? It's just a cloaking field. Also, I will say on the note, going back to the shipping upside down, when the two chairs drop down, like that actually, I got a legitimate jump scare from me. It was great.
That was good. Reminder, you can email us, acp@theincomparable.com is our email for letters, and write in. We love doing letters on the show. Anything else we need to cover? Any other business?
No, I'm excited.
Star Wars
is back, and we are back. Episode 3 of Skeleton Crew drops this week.
Does it have a cool name, Dan?
I don't know if the names have been released yet. I was going to look and see. Oh my god, I have JD Vance open. I need to not have that open.
That's on you.
Yeah.
That is on me. No TVA. Further episode TVA. Names have been released yet.
Okay.
So we will have to see on December 10th when it was released. And we'll be back. I'm sorry that they moved up their release schedules for this show. It's now dropping on Tuesdays. We don't record until Saturdays, which means you don't get to hear this until Sunday at the earliest. So I apologize for the fact that by the time our episode comes out, the new episode of Skeleton Crew is almost dropped. But such is life.
Maybe we can be like your recap for
going forward.
Yeah.
You know what to look for.
Exactly.
Here are the conspiracies to keep in mind this week.
First order hints. That's what we're keeping an eye out for.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up there. We will be back to discuss episode 3. But of course, I want to thank everybody out there for listening, especially those of you who are members of The Incomparable. You can go to theincomparable.com/members. Sign up. Join the club. Get access to lots of great stuff. Bootleg episodes, member specials, access to our Discord, even some cool swag. And best of all, you get to support your fine favorite hosts here at A Complicated Profession.
And maybe really even us.
That is us. We are the only hosts of the show. I checked.
It's fine. It's okay. The joke is passed.
Okay. I would also, of course, like to thank my co-hosts. Kat Penish, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I don't think we ever thank you enough, Dan, for all that you do.
You're welcome.
Real main character energy.
I just want to go home. Tony Sindelar, thank you for being here.
Thank you both for having me.
And thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you next time. But until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.